You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Friday, February 2nd, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be having a spoiler-filled conversation about Matthew Vaughn's newest spy film, Argyle. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor Brad Oman.
Hey, that's me.
Brad, you had the opportunity to go to London for this movie. Tell me about that trip.
I did, yeah. It was just a quick thing for a press junket over there where they had an opportunity for us to screen the movie, and then speak with some of the cast. They had Sam Rockwell and Henry Cavill and John Cena and Ariana DeBose and Bryce Dallas Howard and Bryan Cranston and, of course, director Matthew Vaughn. We didn't get a chance to talk to everybody, but we talked to most of those people, and you'll hear a little bit from a couple of them later on in this podcast. So, yeah, it was just a cool trip over there to check out the movie and talk with all the people from Argyle.
So tell me about your relationship to Matthew Vaughn's movies. Jacob and I did a big podcast episode yesterday where we went through his entire filmography minus Argyle and ranked everything and sort of talked about his strengths and weaknesses as a director. But where do you stand when it comes to Matthew Vaughn as a filmmaker?
You know, I think that I mostly like what he does. I appreciate when he takes big swings, with movies, and like he's one to go for like much more wild and unhinged action, which I appreciate, as we see a lot of, the same stuff over and over again in various action movies. And he's willing to really like swing for the fences and do new things. So like, I really dug Kick-Ass. I liked X-Men First Class, of course. When it comes to the Kingsman movies, I feel like they've been hit or miss, Kingsman: The Secret Service is a lot of fun. The Golden Circle, the Kingsman does some really weird things.
yes, it does. I just watched that for the first time yesterday.
Yeah, to say the least. So yeah, and of course, Layer Cake, that's kind of where he got his start, and that's good stuff. Which largely because it feels like there's a promising Guy Ritchie, proxy there. I think more often than not, I enjoy what he brings to the table.
I doubt that you've had the opportunity to listen to that podcast yet, and I'm not going to like fully repeat myself for listeners who have already heard it, but Stardust was a huge surprise for me when I revisited that in preparation of that podcast conversation. I was like shocked at how much I liked that movie, and that, spoiler alert, ended up being the number one Matthew Vaughn movie for Jacob and I on that list. Where do you stand on Stardust? Have you seen that one in a long time?
No, I haven't seen it since it came out, and so I feel like I'm probably overdue to give it a rewatch.
Yeah, it was like, I thought it was super charming and like, just like shockingly good, and actually holds up pretty well for a movie being made or released in 2007. So anyway, I'm on like a bit of a crusade trying to recommend people check that movie out. So forgive me. Okay, so let's get into our general thoughts about this movie, Argyle. It sounds like you're a bit more of a Matthew Vaughn fan than I am, Brad. I'll just say quickly that I thought this movie was like, okay. I thought that trailer that seemed to be like haunting movie theaters for months on end, and like you just could not escape it, was awful. And I think a huge part of that had to do with just the fact that as a viewer, as a regular moviegoer, I was kind of forced to sit through it, over and over and over again. And that kind of like almost soured me on the idea of even seeing this movie. But I would say that I'm glad that I saw the movie, because the movie is certainly better, in my view anyway, than the trailer sort of made it seem. I think that the trailer is doing a lot of work to obfuscate and kind of like hide as much as possible of like what Argyle really is and really is about. But I thought it was kind of like, yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll get into like an updated ranking of where I think it falls in the Matthew Vaughn stuff in the back half of this episode. But I thought it was much better than I thought going in, but I still didn't love it. But what did you think about it?
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way about the trailer, because I liked certain aspects of it, but seeing it over and over again was really frustrating. I feel the same way actually about the One Love trailer, the Bob Marley movie. I have no desire to see that movie now, because I have seen that trailer in front of every single movie I've seen in theaters for the past 3 to 4 months or something like that. So, and also, like, I feel like some of the stuff they pushed for the Argyle trailer doesn't necessarily, like it makes sense as far as, like, trying to sell what they can without giving anything away. But, like, putting so much of the focus on the cat seems weird, especially when you see how integral that the cat actually is to the movie. I was anticipating the cat having somewhat of more of a significant part. But yeah, I actually think that even though the trailer has some frustrating things about it, I'm kind of glad that they hid a lot of what they did. Because I think I enjoy the second half of the movie more than the first, because the first half hits a lot of the beats that you would expect from a movie like this. But the second half is where Matthew Vaughn really starts to, like, cut loose and do some cool things. And that's when all the, like, twists and turns start coming fast and furious. And so I think for me, the second half, you know, once things started coming and changing, you know, at every little turn, I was just like, okay, this is, you know, some silly fun. And I was on board for it.
Okay, so let's take a break and then we'll come back and get into some spoilery specifics about this film. All right, so, you know, Brad, the plot of this thing is, like, I feel like I came back from this movie and I was trying to talk to my wife about it a little bit. She did not go see it with me. And I was like, you know what? If I tried to just explain this movie to you, it would almost take as long as you watching the movie, just because, like, so much stuff happens and there's, like, so many back and forths and, like, twists and turns and this sort of, like, labyrinthine plot machinations and all this stuff. So I think for the purposes of this podcast, it doesn't really make sense for us to go, like, beat by beat necessarily. But I did want to just open it up here for, like, highs and lows. Like, did you have any moments that you particularly loved? Anything you thought that the movie kind of, like, flubbed a little bit? Any what moments, I guess, stand out to you, whether they be positive or negative?
So there are two huge action moments in the third act that I was, like, just totally having a blast with, because they just they take things up to 11. And there are two action sequences where you've never honestly never seen two action sequences like this. And they're visually, like, unique. They're as far as the action and how it's executed, it's unique. And they're so bonkers. Like, there's no other way to describe it. Like, you would have never expected to see scenes like this in the movie. And so we're just going full bore spoilers with this one, right?
Yes.
So the two that I'm talking about are, first, there's a sequence where Bryce Dallas Howard's character, having realized who she is and everything, and Sam Rockwell's character, who is her former partner and lover, team up to fight through a stream of, like, you know, armored bad guys with guns. And to do this, they shoot out these canisters of colorful, vibrant smoke as they leave this weapon armory, you know, armed to the teeth. And this is all set to Leona Lewis's cover of Run, which was originally done by Snow Patrol. And they're moving basically in slow motion in this very elegant fashion, as if they're doing an action sequence that is also, like, a classic movie musical sequence. And Bryce Dallas Howard and Sam Rockwell are literally dancing with each other and also fighting bad guys. Like, Aiden is, like, embracing her and moving her around, as, you know, as if they were dancing in a ballroom, but they're also shooting weapons and hitting bad guys and, like, doing these, like, acrobats around. And all the while, the smoke that surrounds them continually changing colors and everything and starts to form shapes around them, like an actual heart and a rainbow behind them and everything. And it's such an elegantly and, like, silly and, like, fun, fantastical action sequence. And I've never seen anything like that before. And it was, I just thought it was so cool to see that.
I loved the look of this scene. It reminded me a little bit of, like, the sort of similarly colorful smoke scene in Birds of Prey with the one, I don't know if you remember, but I want to say, like, Harley Quinn goes into, like, a police station or something and is, like, shooting smoke, gas, and stuff like that in that scene. It's been a while since I've seen that movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love the look of this. I just don't really think that the dance/fight combo really worked for me very well, because I kept spending the whole time during that moment thinking, like, A, wow, this looks super cool. And, like, it does seem unlike anything that I've really seen before. But B, like, what is the practicality of what's going on here? Have these characters performed this exact dance before? And they're just, like, spinning around and shooting indiscriminately. And it seems like every shot they're hitting, you know, just wave after wave of these people who are coming in. And like, it seems like they've practiced these particular moves before, but there's also fight stuff incorporated into it. So I was just like kind of caught up in like the logic of it and being like, what is going on? This doesn't really make sense on a practical level, but like, I guess as like a metaphor for like the emotional connection of these characters and like them getting back together sort of as after all this time apart, it works more on like a, yeah, like a metaphorical or like a thematic level almost than it does to me as like a practical thing, if that makes any sense. So
no, for sure. And I think if you let it be kind of like a fantastical representation of what they did and maybe not take it at like literal face value, is like, oh, this is what they actually did, then I think that that's even more fun.
Yeah. So the other big action scene that you were going to talk about, tell me about that one. That's the one that I assume the skating scene that happens right after this.
Yeah. So they, in one of the other climactic scenes, they kind of get cornered in like the division is the evil organization. Their lair is aboard an oil tanker. And so they get cornered in this room where there are a bunch of oil tanks and stuff around. And so there's a shootout in there and some of the oil cans get like blasted open. So there's oil seeping all over the floor and there's no way for them to easily keep firing without igniting like the entire room in flames. And they can't easily like walk around to like just fight each other because the oil is slippery and everything. And so then Bryce Dallas Howard gets this crazy idea because she, after regaining her memory, she was told that she was in some kind of an accident.
A skating accident.
Yeah, skating accident. Because she used to be a figure skater. And then she realizes to herself, she's like, wait a minute, is the stuff about figure skating in my life real? And Sam Rockwell tells her, he's like, yeah. And so then all of a sudden she like takes basically knives and sticks them into the bottom of her like combat boots, turning them into makeshift ice skates. And she starts slicking around on the oil that's spilled all over the floor, like this professional ice skater skating around, spinning, cutting, punching, you know, hitting all these bad guys with, you know, and nobody can do anything about it because nobody can try and shoot at her or anything. And she's just zooming around and she just keeps going and going. And it's just like, oh my God, what is going on?
It definitely feels like these two scenes are where the movie kind of like cranks it to 11, to use an overused term. I mean, to a degree, I enjoyed this, Brad, because of like the sort of like sheer ballsiness of it. And like, it seems like at least Matthew Vaughn is trying to be creative and like give us an action scene that we haven't quite seen before. I thought a little bit about the first Transporter movie with Jason Statham, where there's a similar scene where like he fights a bunch of dudes and there's like oil all over the place. And I want to see he like steps into like bike. I don't know. You know how like sometimes when you're in certain bikes, you can step on the pedals and there will be like a little place for your foot to lock in or something. I think he steps on a couple of those and breaks them off of a nearby bicycle. And he's able to sort of traverse this oil slick area where these guys are just like slipping and falling all over the place. So it reminded me of that a little bit, but this is way more, you know, dialed up basically. It's like all over the place. She's doing, you know, spinning motions and like full on figure skating routines basically, while, you know, taking these guys out. So I think my same issue goes with like the colorful thing that happened right before. I kind of feel like the movie got greedy a little bit where it tried to throw on like one too many moves. Like you see what the film is trying to do. You see what Vaughn is trying to do with these action sequences. And it's just kind of like, for me, like overstayed both of those scenes, kind of overstayed their welcome a little bit. I feel like he pushed it just a little bit too far. Like the longer you're in that scene, the longer I was in that scene, the more I started thinking about the practicality of what was going on. And it kind of like took me out of it a little bit. I'm like, I don't think the knives would really work that way, you know, being jammed into the bottom of a shoe or whatever. But whereas like, I might not have thought about that.
Well, I hope you're never in a situation where you have to find out, Ben.
You're absolutely right. I just feel like maybe I wouldn't have thought that if the scene had ended, you know, a minute or two before it did, you know, if that makes sense. Yeah. So But yeah, it's certainly like, I definitely appreciate that sort of big swing quality that you were talking about there. So those are some of the highs.
I do think if there's a general flaw potentially with the movie, as much as I enjoyed a lot of the twists and turns, it did feel like at some point it kind of became a little bit tiresome, like, oh no, another one. But like at the same time, the twist was always something that that was still interesting enough that it's like, oh, okay, well, let's see where it goes from here.
Yeah. So, yeah, let's jump ahead to that, actually, before we even get into, like, some of the other lows or whatever of the movie. A question that I just wrote down were the twists effective? And there are so many twists in this movie, Brad. I was, like, kind of shocked to see that, like, it seems like every, you know, maybe after the first act or something, it seems like every few minutes you were just kind of being pummeled by, like, a world-shaking revelation, you know, on the scale of this movie, even though it wasn't necessarily like a world spanning a movie with like world spanning stakes. It seemed like relatively small scale, which I appreciated, even though it was like this international adventure. But yeah, I was just kind of shocked with like how many twists there were in this thing. What did you make of that?
Yeah, for me, you know, I had a lot of fun with most of them. You know, I think that the one that like you probably start to figure out as the movie goes on, because it's the only one that really makes sense. And it's arguably the biggest twist, because the marketing was about, you know, find out who the real Agent Argyle is. And as we find out, the real Agent Argyle is Bryce Dallas Howard's character, Ellie Conway, who lived a former life as a spy named Rachel Kyle, or Agent R. Kyle. Agent Argyle. There you go. Which a little bit flimsy, maybe. It's kind of like the idea of that Tom Marvolo riddle spells out "I am Lord Voldemort." It's like, yes. I don't know about that.
Yeah.
But yeah. So like, so that's the big twist. But then like, there's so many fun other ones that come after that. I think my favorite one probably was finding out that like, because you're trying to work through like, wait a minute, how does this make sense or whatever, is when you see Bryan Cranston's character Ritter, who is the head of the evil organization known as the Division, walks in to a hotel room as Bryce Dallas Howard's character's father, and she's not like surprised by this. And you're in your mind, you're like, oh my, wait, that's the bad guy. How is he her father, and how does she not know about any of this or anything? And that's when you're trying to figure out, wait, what? How does this make sense? And then like that, and then it starts just going from there, because then you find out that Catherine O'Hara's character, who is her mom, who has been this lovely person this entire time, isn't actually her mom. And then that she's been brainwashed after a mission went wrong. And so all this stuff just starts firing. I loved the reaction from Bryce Dallas Howard when she looks back at Catherine O'Hara in slow motion, like, yeah. What the fuck?
Yeah, that was great. And that Cranston reveal, I was kind of like, oh my God, this character is like so much more evil than I thought he was, because yeah. He is like basically saying, you know, we need to kidnap my own daughter in this scenario in order to, you know, execute my evil plan or whatever. And then you realize in like another twist pretty soon afterwards that they're not actually Ellie's parents or Rachel's parents or whatever. So like, that's kind of like a 1-2 punch of twist moments right there, just in, you know, involving those characters, that sort of trio of characters.
And I actually love the way that Cranston plays it too, because there's like a brief moment when he goes in to like to hug her as dad, but like the look on his face is like, oh my God.
Yeah. And he seems like he's about to choke her or something from behind. Yeah.
Yeah. There's good stuff there. And then, you know, later as the story continues, you get the twist where, you know, you find out that Rachel Kyle was actually working as a double agent for the Division. And then Sam Rockwell's character, who is her former partner and lover, was unaware of this. And so then it seems like maybe she turns back, you know, to her dark decision to work for the Division and kill Sam Rockwell's character. But no, she wasn't actually trying to kill him. She was just making it look like it. And so he's still doing the right thing. So there was that. I think the one twist where I was like, this is going a little, it's a little too much now, is after they've gone through the smoke action sequence and the ice skating action sequence, and they're on the surface of the oil tanker, when Catherine O'Hara shows up and basically Winter Soldiers Ellie Conway, and all of a sudden she's being used as a weapon who has to now fight Sam Rockwell, and it's just like, oh no.
Yeah, it's a little, I feel like the whole vascular corridor thing with Ariana DeBose's character and the resurrection and all that, like, that was teased a little bit early on in the movie, but then when it's actually, you know, incorporated into the plot where like Rachel shoots Sam Rockwell's character Aiden in the chest, and then you realize later that she like stopped the bleeding somehow. Like the movie kind of like hand waves away how all of that works. And I was kind of, and even, you know, one of the characters says like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard when they lay that out. And I was kind of thinking that myself sitting in the audience, like, all right, I understand the idea of like, you know, the old trick where like you're wearing a bulletproof vest when you didn't think somebody was, or even like, you know, there's a little booklet or something that's in your jacket pocket that kind of protects a bullet from hitting you in the heart or whatever. This is like, no, the bullet actually shreds through your torso, but it just happens to go on the exact right trajectory where it doesn't, you know, inflict fatal damage or whatever. I was like, this is a little silly even for Matthew Vaughn.
But. Yeah, of course. But yeah, you know, but I think at that point too, I had already just like bought into so much of the insanity and just how over the top everything was that I was totally on board. And then, and that's the thing too, is like the second half is stronger because Matthew Vaughn starts doing crazy wild things. And the first half doesn't feel quite so strong because it's kind of formulaic as far as giving us the story of somebody caught up in something they're not supposed to be. But like, I think that if he didn't do that gradual lead up to it, it wouldn't be as effective, you know, because like he can't just throw us in and like be wild the entire time, you know. It has to like gradually get there. And so I think that like that actually, you know, works to the movie's favor in a sense.
And I think the aspect of that works the most for me is actually the romance between Bryce Dallas Howard and Sam Rockwell's characters. Yeah. I found myself like surprisingly invested in that, given how much I kind of like hated their characters just from the trailer, you know, but like especially the moment where they go, you know, they have this big escape scene where they like break out of a hacker's place and escape on a boat and all that. And so they've like gone through, and there's this big long train sequence where they first meet, and there's a big fight that once again I thought lasted a little bit too long there, but like they've been through some stuff together as characters. And then they end up in the Arabian Peninsula somewhere, and she's got this fancy dress on, and they dance while they're waiting on, you know, the secret holder or whatever this character's name is. They're about to like have a meetup with somebody, and she's supposed to get this like silver bullet that has all the information, basically the knock list for the division, basically. And they have this really nice moment on this dance floor where it's revealed that like they were lovers, and like Sam Rockwell's character had been sort of watching over her for 5 years while she's undergone this, you know, basically transformation. This is sort of like, you know, amnesiatic kind of thing where she was being this whole other person and writing these spy novels and stuff. And he was kind of like watching her from afar and protecting her. And like the, I don't know, I'm just a sucker for love stories like that, where like one character has been yearning for another, or sort of like yearning across time and space, and there's like huge stretches of time where it just becomes so tragic because of all the time lost in the process. There's just something about those kind of love stories that really get to me, and I thought this was actually executed pretty well. I was like very on board with the romance there. What did you think about how that worked, and then I guess more broadly about Bryce Dallas Howard and Sam Rockwell and their performances in this movie?
Yeah, that was one of the things that I really loved, that that took a big focus of the second act, is really putting the spotlight on their relationship and making that the core of the movie, of her kind of rekindling that connection with Sam Rockwell's character, Aiden, and having it be such a big part of how the second movie played out. You know, it had a little bit of a Mr. and Mrs. Smith vibe to it without the infighting. And yeah, having it, Bryce Dallas Howard at the crux of that too, and really giving those action sequences more of like a female perspective, without like, I like that when Bryce Dallas Howard's character remembers all these things and like what she can do and everything, she doesn't necessarily suddenly turn into this like tough masculine version, you know, of a female character. Like she's still, you know, essentially a version of herself, and that's why those sequences have like an air of femininity to them. That was something that actually Matthew Vaughn talked about too, is that he wanted to have that feeling there in those action sequences. And so, because usually, you know, when you have female characters like that, there's a tendency to make them like gruff and tough, and you know, and not necessarily feel have that air of femininity. And so, mm-hmm. I really appreciated that. And Bryce Dallas Howard and Sam Rockwell are both great in their respective performances. That like, I wouldn't have ever thought they would have been a great duo like this, but Sam Rockwell does such a great job as being like this everyman spy who isn't necessarily like dashing and debonair like James Bond. And then when he gets into like cool guy spy mode, it still feels like a lot of fun. Like when he shows up with that Argyle haircut, I'm just I love that so much. And Bryce Dallas Howard, I think one of the things that I really appreciate about her performance is she did a great job of making everything around her that was so unbelievable feel grounded. Like I you really feel the emotion that she feels, like when she's panicked and crying and everything. Like it never felt like she was overdoing it or anything, and I think it helped lend a little bit of believability to everything that was happening around her, even though it's nothing that is, you know, plausible at all.
Yeah, I think even in something like Romancing the Stone, which this movie is clearly influenced by, like Kathleen Turner's character in that movie is supposed to be like a romance novelist who gets caught up on this whirlwind adventure with Michael Douglas's character, and she, you know, she's supposed to feel like a fish out of water, but there's just something about that character that kind of makes her feel maybe a little bit more capable than a normal person would be in some of those situations. And Bryce Dallas Howard, I agree. I think she does a good job of really feeling like she's truly legitimately out of her elements in some of the, like, you know, some of the more like spy centric kind of stuff. But she also walks that fine line of like having that kind of Jason Bourne moment where they're out at that French vineyard or whatever. And Aiden like tries to kick her ass basically as a way to kind of like shake her memories back into place. And she kind of like pulls off the physical aspect of it, you know, pretty convincingly, I think. So she has like a tough part to play here by, you know, having to sort of walk that line of two totally different sides of this character and make it feel believable all the way through. So I guess before we get into the ending of the movie, was there any other moment that you wanted to highlight here? Anything good or bad that stood out to you?
You know, I mentioned the cat before, and the cat is such a weird part of this movie because like it does bring certain elements of comedy. The way Sam Rockwell reacts to the cat and whatnot is funny and that kind of thing. But honestly, more often than not, the cat felt like an unnecessary distraction rather than a feature. And I also felt like there were a lot of instances where people were just unnecessarily mean to the cat for no reason. Like the fact that Sam Rockwell just like takes the cat and throws it over the edge, you know, hoping that there is an airbag down there for them to land on. And then like Bryan Cranston's character, obviously he's a villain, but like the way he kind of just throws the cat aside when he's in the hotel, just like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
There's just so many times where like he's just mistreated, and I just felt bad for the cat.
Yeah, that cat gets dropped a lot in that sort of backpack thing with the little space portal or whatever looking out of it. Like I feel like, you know, it spends a lot of the movie strapped to Bryce Dallas Howard's back, but it spends maybe just as much time, you know, basically getting like shoved around in different ways. And like, yeah, you're right. Based on how the cat was appearing in the trailer, it definitely seemed like there was going to be some sort of cat centric moment that really came out and like where the cat saved the day. And I guess it does like scratch Bryan Cranston's face at the end, but like, yeah,
but also kind of ruins it.
Yeah. So it didn't really feel as, I don't know, as like movie-ish in the conclusion to that the cat character's arc, I guess, if you want to put it that way. I will say that the opening chase scene in this movie, where you know you've got it's within the world of the Argyle book that Bryce Dallas Howard's character is writing in the very beginning, and you've got Henry Cavill and John Cena and Dua Lipa and Ariana DeBose shows up there as a sort of supporting player. I think the opening chase is one of the worst looking chases I've seen in a long time. Like, Brad, this movie has a budget of like $200 million. And the visual effects where Henry Cavill is driving that big thing down these atop Grecian you know, homes or whatever. It reminded me a little bit of like Bad Boys 2, where those characters are just like driving down through the side of a mountain and just completely crushing, you know, these communities and homes that have been built up there. Henry Cavill is just like cruising around like on top of all of these Greek homes or whatever. It just looks really, really rough. And I want to be careful to not blame the visual effects professionals who probably, as has been, you know, widely reported, like the VFX industry has it pretty rough right now. And so these people probably did not have nearly the time or the resources they needed to make it look great. But I don't know, man. Like, it just looked awful. I don't know what to say. What did you think about that, the opening of this?
No, I agree wholeheartedly. When I was watching that, I was just like, man, I hope that the rest of the movie like has sequences that look better than this, because yeah, like so many things just looked artificial and like really just like took you out of the experience, you know. And like, granted, it's supposed to be, you know, like an exaggerated spy world because it's happening in the novel and whatnot, but like, yeah, it was really rough to look at.
Okay, so let's talk about the ending of the movie. After, you know, the big climax is over, the film ends with Bryce Dallas Howard's character finishing the Argyle book series. I think it's book 6 that she completes.
Book and
she's
five.
Back. Oh, book 5, I'm sorry. And she's back at like a speaking engagement for the premiere or the debut of this new book. And it mirrors a scene that happened earlier in the movie where she's answering questions from the audience. And if memory serves correctly, basically the final bit of the actual movie is somebody saying, okay, yeah, there's a guy in the back, let's take a question from you. And he stands up and he's wearing this yellow shirt and he's got a mullet, and it's Henry Cavill. And he says something along the lines of like, I don't have a question, but I'm sure you have a lot for me. And she kind of gasps, and that's the end of the movie. And I was like, wait a second, what now? Like, how does this work? Because yeah, as you alluded to earlier, like, it's kind of revealed pretty early in the movie that Bryce Dallas Howard is Argyle. You know, she is like the Henry Cavill character is kind of like a version of her, so to speak. Like, she's writing down.
Yeah, it's basically a manifestation of like herself as a character who is a spy. And that's how she visualizes like the character of Argyle. It's Henry Cavill with that, you know, that flat top haircut and like, yeah, you know.
And so, you know, in my mind, and characters say this explicitly, that she's like, you know, the stuff that she wrote in those books actually are like memories of missions that she's gone on and things like that. Right. So, you know, in my mind, I'm like, okay, this is a very closed circle. This is a very clean loop here. Like, she is this character and she talks to him in mirrors sometimes. And he basically gives her the old, like, you don't need me, it's been in you the whole kind of, you know, the whole time kind of speech or whatever at one point. So then the fact that Henry Cavill with a mullet and a kind of a twangy accent or whatever shows up at the end of this kind of upends everything I thought I knew about this movie. Like, what am I supposed to take away from this? How does this actually work within the world of the story that's being told here? Like, who is this Henry Cavill guy that shows up in the real world? Do you have a read on what the movie was trying to say with that ending?
I mean, it's definitely a tease for a sequel, and I think it's meant to be that kind of like what the fuck moment, and like it's supposed to upend everything. As far as explaining it, like, I don't know how they do that, unless that, like, the only way I feel like you could is that there would have to be some other level of brainwashing that happened where they made Rachel Kyle think that she did all of these things. Maybe that was like part of the effort of turning her into like a double agent for the division. Mm-hmm. And that really what they did is give her the memories of another agent, maybe a former agent of the division who defected and went and worked for, you know, the CIA or, you know, whoever the good guy agency is. And so that's the only thing that I can think of, is that Argyle, in addition to being, you know, Rachel Kyle, is actually a real person that they, whose memories they use, you know, to quote unquote create Rachel Kyle. But that's the guess on my part.
Yeah, that was one option I had. Or like, is he a character who just has nothing to do with like the spy stuff, and he's just like a guy who she knew in her previous life or something, who maybe served as like the physical embodiment of
but she's shocked to see him. So there's there's no recognition there or anything like that. You know, or at least that's what it seems like, you know, because it would be weird that somebody that looks exactly like a character she imagined exists in the real world.
Yeah, super weird. And yeah, just so strange. And then the mid-credit scene, Brad, was even stranger to me. And I guess it makes sense when you really think about it, but I had trouble in this moment. So, you know, I think it cuts to a scene that says, some text that says 20 years earlier, and there's a guy who's like in his 20s.
And keep in mind, it's the very first thing you see is the exterior of the tavern called the King's Man. So immediately you're like, oh, we're getting a tie-in to the Kingsman universe.
Yeah, which, like, I don't think I did not finish Kingsman: The Golden Circle, so I don't think we've ever seen this establishment before, and I don't know. I mean, maybe I remember that movie having like tie-ins with different alcohol brands and things like that. So, like, you know, to my knowledge, Kingsman was basically like a tailor service. Like, you know, it sort of they operated out of this tailor shop. I didn't realize necessarily that they got into like the tavern business or whatever. Right. But anyway, so yeah, this guy, I guess 20 years before this movie, who's like in his 20s ish, orders a drink at this tavern with a twist. And the bartender, I don't remember the name of the drink, but the bartender basically says something like, you know, we're not going to make that. We don't make that here. And the guy starts like removing ingredients until only the twist is left. And I guess it's meant to be like a code of some kind, because the bartender then brings out this box with a gun in it and
a silencer.
Yeah. And a silencer. And the guy says something like, oh, well, that certainly is a twist or whatever. And then I forget exactly how it goes. Maybe you remember the details better than I do, but in my memory, the bartender says like, what's your name or something. And the camera like dramatically pushes in on this. And the guy's like, my name is Aubrey Argyle. And so like right there, I'm like, what? Like,
yeah.
So
and then it cuts to like an image in Ellie Conway's office of a poster of the cover art for the book Argyle. And in text, it says book one, the movie, coming soon.
Yeah. So, you know, at first, like when I was explaining this to my wife afterwards, God bless her for even listening to me ramble on about this nonsense without having seen the movie and having the proper context to try to help me understand what the hell is going on here. I think I eventually came to the realization that like this guy is supposed to be a younger version of the Henry Cavill that we saw at the very end of the movie with the mullet and the yellow shirt. It did not seem to me that was like immediately obvious watching it, because he didn't look anything like Henry Cavill. But did on that base level, did you understand that to be true?
So that I'm not sure entirely about that, because that wouldn't entirely make sense. But it also still doesn't make sense in another way either. Because so to explain the impetus for like the movie Argyle is, there's actually a story behind this, because there's a novel that exists that's on shelves now. It came out earlier this month that is called Argyle, and it's written by quote unquote Ellie Conway, who is the character in this movie. Now it's been proposed and, you know, seemingly confirmed that Ellie Conway is just a pseudonym. No one has fully confirmed who the actual author is, but the book is meant to be quote unquote the inspiration for this movie. But the book itself is not the story of the movie Argyle. The book Argyle is about this young kid, 20 something, named Aubrey Argyle, who gets caught up in the world of spies and intrigue and whatnot. It is a totally separate story about this character, Aubrey Argyle, and his exploits across the world and getting involved in all this intrigue and stuff like that. So what it seems like is, it seems like they're setting up a universe in which the Argyle books that Ellie Conway wrote are also being turned into movies. I'm not entirely sure that means that version of Aubrey Argyle would be the same as the Henry Cavill character we see at the end of the movie. Mm-hmm. Your guess is as good as mine. Because we still have the same problem of, okay, well, if there's this whole history of, you know, Aubrey Argyle, then like, how is Bryce Dallas Howard the agent Argyle?
Yeah. It doesn't make much sense. And like, so,
and the fact that it takes in the Kingsman universe doesn't really help any matters.
No, that feels like an entirely unnecessary connection that just complicates things way, way further than they already were. But like, yeah, the book one, the movie coming soon, kind of seems like it's calling its shot a little bit, and almost like promising that a sequel / prequel or something, maybe more a prequel, I guess, is on the way. I don't know if that's actually been confirmed. You know, we're recording this on Friday, like as the movie's coming out, so I'm not sure if that's been like officially confirmed, or if Apple has like secretly decided to just go all in on the Argyle universe. And like,
well, if you would like to know for sure, you can listen to the Matthew Vaughn interview that I conducted, because I specifically asked him about the credit scene. And he didn't necessarily give anything away, but he did confirm that the idea is to, like, you know, set up a thing where they're able to tell this story, but also with the You know, the caveat that, like, you know, audiences have to show up to Argyle to actually, you know, make it worth doing something like that. But yeah, the hope is that that's what they would do.
Okay, so I'm going to play the audio from that Matthew Vaughn interview in just a second. The last thing that I have, the last question I have, Brad, is like, if book one, the movie, is coming soon, did the Ellie Conway character, did the Bryce Dallas Howard character in this movie Argyle write book one? Like, you know, in the Argyle book series, the 5 book or 6 book, however many books there were, in the series that she sort of wrote and published over this 5-year period where that character had amnesia, do you think the first book in that series is contains the events that we're about to see adapted in this potential future project that's being teased here? Or is it like a separate thing entirely?
Well, so that's the thing, is the Argyle book as it exists in our world, in like you and yours and mine real world.
Yeah, like I can walk into a Barnes and Noble and pick up the Argyle book right now.
Yeah, it's not about anything that happens in the Argyle movie. So like I don't necessarily know how that would make sense. So like I wonder if like the books would have to, the story would have to exist in the Kingsman universe, and then maybe the Kingsman universe is also its own fictional universe within the world of Argyle, if that makes sense.
Oh my god, my head is just like spinning. I don't know, man. This is so weird. I don't. This is like one of the most confusing endings of a movie that I've experienced, that especially that 1-2 punch of like the live action Henry Cavill with the mullet and then this mid-credit sequence. I just kind of came out of this movie feeling like I'd just been punched in the face. Like, wait a second, what is going on? Like, I just have so many questions. So
yeah,
really, really bizarre experience. But yeah, maybe Matthew Vaughn can help sort of shed some light on this thing. So here's Brad's conversation with Argyle. I think was he the writer of this, or just the...
I believe he also co-wrote the script with Jason Fuchs.
Okay, so Argyle co-writer and director Matthew Vaughn.
Matthew, it's great to talk to you about Argyle. I saw the movie last night, and I want to say we're going to get into spoiler stuff, and we're going to hold it until after the movie comes out, so don't worry about any of
that. Can't resist it, hey?
Well, because I want to talk about one of the big sequences towards the end of the movie. Mm-hmm. It's unlike anything I think I've seen in an action movie before, and it's that big dance fight with all the smoke swirling around, and you have Sam and Bryce actually like dancing with each other. Mm. What was the inception of that scene, and how did they come together?
My mind obviously works in mysterious and screwed up ways. I had this sort of, what's happening, I've been flirting with the idea of doing a musical, which I'm going to do now. So this was me going into the musical fantasy sequence, and I wanted to see what it was like working with choreographers and do something different. Because I do think it's really important for me. I love action, but I don't like seeing the same action again and again and again and again, which I'm sure you see even more movies than I do. And you just go, come on, you know. That and the ice skating sequences were just, I thought, let's just do stuff differently, you know, do things. And I also wanted to do it with a feminine twist, you know, which I think those two sequences have.
Yeah, and that's I think what's interesting too is watching the movie is that they've kind of held back on the romance side of the movie, and that's that comes into play in such a big way. And the dynamic between Sam and Bryce is fantastic there.
Yeah, I mean it's really weird. To Universal's credit, I said please don't give everything away, and they have been pretty disciplined, you know, which. You know, a lot of times you see trailers or you go into a movie and you know really what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And you know, I think some of the best cinematic experiences I ever had was Star Wars, In the Name of the Rose, films that I knew nothing about, and I sat there and you're like, what was this?
Yeah.
And I'm hoping, you know, it's harder when you're trying to create a big blockbuster that you have to get people to come and tease them, I mean, not even tease them, when we just sell the hell out of it, and then they come and you go, yeah, seen the movie and with all the material. So with this one, at least I think people will have a surprise and go on a bit of an epic thrill ride without realizing what they're going on.
Speaking of surprise, another thing that people don't know going in is that there's a mid-credit sequence that teases something else to come, and I wondered if you could talk about that, because it feels like it throws the whole universe for a loop because it ties into the Kingsman universe and also sets up the idea of turning the actual Argyle book into a movie. And I assume that's something that you would like to do.
Yeah, as you said, tease is the word, and it's more about, hey, you know what? If everybody goes buys tickets to this movie and makes it into a hit, they're going to get there's a lot more ingredients that we want to play with and make some more fun, tasty movies for them. But we need them to make the, you know, buy into the first one first.
Of course.
Yeah.
And along with that, we have that final scene with Henry Cavill putting on a little bit of a country twang. I wondered if you could provide a little bit of insight into that, maybe.
I can absolutely say that that is the whole basis of Argyle 2. And it's exactly to see Henry do stuff that you've never seen Henry do before.
Awesome. Sounds perfect. And cool. they're giving me the light, so that's my time.
Great.
I appreciate it, Matthew. Thanks a lot.
Cheers. Thank you very much.
All right. So, yeah, that definitely did shed some light on some things there. I guess he's sort of in wait-and-see mode until the financial returns come back from the box office receipts and all that stuff for this movie. But we'll see how this does. Well, I mean, that really feels like Apple is kind of rolling the dice on Universal distributing this thing and really relying on that one trailer to get people in and for people like us to not drive people away, honestly, with this like WTF thing of how this movie ends. So we'll see how this movie performs. But I guess where would you rank Argyle in, if you had to make a ranking of all of Matthew Vaughn's films, Brad, where would you put Argyle?
I think it would probably land somewhere in the middle. I don't think it's quite as good as like Kick-Ass or the original Kingsman, but I think it's definitely better than like Golden Circle or the Kingsman. You know, I haven't rewatched Stardust yet, but yeah, I think somewhere in the middle, and I definitely enjoyed it. You know, so like for all like the logical, you know, nonsensical nature of like what happens in the second half and with the ending and the credit scene, like if anything, I'm just curious to see how they dig their way out of it. You know.
Yeah. I think I fall in the same place. I think in terms of like the updated ranking from yesterday, I'm going to keep Kingsman: The Golden Circle at number 8, The Kingsman at number 7. I'm going to put Argyle at number 6. And then that'll have Kick-Ass, Layer Cake, Kingsman: The Secret Service, X-Men First Class, and Stardust above it in that order. So I feel like that feels right. So cool. All right. Well, thanks for having this conversation with me, Brad. I was kind of hoping we would come to like, you know, some sort of a transcendent understanding of exactly what the hell they were trying to do with the end of this movie. And I feel like we didn't quite get there, but it was a fun conversation nonetheless. And hopefully we helped our audiences sort of work through some of this stuff in real time. So yeah, you can find more about Argyle at slashfilm.com. I will link to a few things in the show notes as well. Slashfilm Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe to our newsletter. There's a link for that in the show notes as well. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a moment to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all next week.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.